This is Sustainable East End, a monthly series about how land use, water resources, energy, transportation, and food impact the environment of the Twin Forks of Long Island. With co-producer Tony Ernst, I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Today, we explore the Peconic Estuary Partnership with Dr. Joyce Novak, its program director. The Peconic Estuary study area includes the Peconic Estuary and the land areas that contribute groundwater and stormwater runoff to the estuary. It begins with the headwaters of the Peconic River, spans the several bays from Flanders to Gardner's, and ends in Block Island Sound between Plum Island and Montauk Point. In total, the Peconic Estuary study area includes more than 150,000 surface water acres and 125,000 land acres. It consists of more than 100 distinct bays, harbors, embayments, and tributaries. The Peconic Estuary Partnership's mission is to advise and educate the towns and people of the region on how to protect the environment of the estuary and its watershed. I want to welcome Joyce Novak to Sustainable East End.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Joyce, you are the director of the Peconic Estuary Program, which is now actually being called the Peconic Estuary Partnership. Why that change?
National Estuary Programs, the Peconic Estuary Partnership being one of those, are community-based non-regulatory programs. And we wanted to better reflect how we interacted in the community and with local municipalities, which is in partnerships. And our partnerships are what make us strong and what drive us. And so we chose by unanimous vote to change our name to include that.
So this is non-regulatory. It is a government agency. Is it federal? How does it function?
So that's a very good question. So the National Estuary Programs, the Peconic is one of 28 National Estuary Programs created by Congress in 1987 as Section 320 of the Clean Water Act, specifically to restore and protect our most threatened bays, rivers, and watersheds. We were formally designated in 1993, and our job, as set out by the statute, is to assess and reduce human impacts on coastal habitats. As such, we are non-regulatory, and our aim really is to support and communicate scientific data and work with our local partners to better reflect, to be able to carry out our mission.
And so how do you work with the local partners?
So we work with the local partners in many ways. We're guided by a management and a policy board that is made up of the county, Suffolk County, the East End towns, the New York State DEC, and many community groups and scientific partners. So currently our CAC, our Citizen Advisory Committee, is chaired by a gentleman from the Nature Conservancy, and our Technical Advisory Committee by a gentleman from Cornell Cooperative Extension. And so all of our groups are public, and we welcome involvement with all of the organizations on the East End and individual citizens.
And I have to say, I got to know you when I was with the Akabonic Protection Committee. I was president at the time, and you were of enormous help to us. You came to one of our meetings and talked about the programs of the PEP, and very clearly dedicated as a top concern with the issue of pollution, particularly nitrogen pollution. The Akabonic Protection Committee is concerned with water quality in Akabonic Harbor. And so I understand that the PEP, that is one of its top concerns. What are the threats to water quality?
So the Peconic Estuary Partnership is guided by its Comprehensive Conservation Management Plan, which over the past 2 years we have updated and will be releasing in 2020. And in redoing that and sort of reevaluating our water quality goals for clean waters, for healthy ecosystems, and safe recreation. Nutrient pollution is certainly at the top of the list, nitrogen in particular in the Pocomics, as you said. We're also still concerned about pathogens, toxics, emerging contaminants, plastics, of course, in the waterways, and all of these things affect different embayments at different levels. So in the western Pocomics, you know, we do see a higher level of nitrogen than we do in the eastern Pocomics. Some embayments have pathogen pollution issues, while others really don't. And so it's really looking at a sub-watershed scale at each of the areas, like you did in Agabonic. Mm-hmm. At what rises to the top as sort of the most pressing issues for those embayments.
So what are some of the pollutants that or contaminants that you're looking at other than nitrogen?
So as I said, we look at pathogens. Suffolk County does extensive surface water quality testing. We look at things like pH. We look at water temperatures and water salinities to gauge different things in the water. The groundwater is a big issue, and so we're keeping our eye on the PFOS and PFAS issues that are happening in the waters. Microplastics, we'll be thinking about how best to test for those. The EPA has an equipment loan program where we're hoping to work with partners to be able to really start testing for microplastics. USGS does some of this work already, but we'd like to expand that throughout the Pocomics. And pathogens, stormwater management in certain areas is still an issue. And so, of course, keeping an eye out on the pathogens throughout the estuary is a priority for us.
Now, here's a question that was submitted by my co-host, Tony Ernst. He says, referring to the map, and you have developed many maps to bring out the issues that we've just been talking about. He says, referring to the map showing the time it takes for pollution to reach the waters of the estuary, there's a red band along the shore where pollution reaches the water 0 to 2 years from its source emission. His question is, what about the Shinnecock Canal? Development now has structures down to the water on the east side of the canal. What is your feeling about, how this complicates issues for cleanup?
That's an interesting question. So, yes, we look at that 0 to 2 travel time band as a high priority sort of area. The Shinnecock Canal is our only point of sort of interconnectivity with the Shinnecock Bays. And the EPA has recently started to bring up, is that something that we should be looking more closely at? And it's really not, when we talk about waterfront building, waterfront industry working waterfronts, it's not the only place that there is the potential of pollutants to access the water in a more immediate sense, you know, when you have heavy building right onto the shoreline, bulkheaded areas. So we do look at this a little bit differently, and we try and assess these areas individually and work with the towns to see what's going on, what the planning regulations look like, and how we can have conversations about fixing those problems.
You know, you mentioned before that the estuary program, the National Estuary Program, was a part of the Clean Water Act. This current Trump administration has been rolling back significantly many, many environmental laws. And there was a recent rollback in the last couple of years of portions of the Clean Water Act, if I'm not mistaken. Could you address what are some of the regulatory rollbacks that have occurred and what has been or could be the impact?
Well, I'm going to start by saying that the National Estuary Programs are very strongly supported on both sides of the aisle in Congress. And it's something that when I work with my colleagues in the other 27 areas, we all are sort of happy to report. We leverage on a national average $19 for every one federal dollar that's spent. And so it is a way that all of our representatives can get behind the National Estuary Program.
And I'm not sure, but I think you're referring to the Waters of the United States rule that was rolled back about a year ago.
Yeah.
And this would have a great impact on us, as it does in all of the NEPs, as it really pulls away protections for temporary connectivity of areas. So in times of high flood, where wetlands might connect to the ocean, and then recede again and not necessarily offer that same consistent level of connectivity. Obviously, this is something that we have talked to our representatives about, that we were sort of advocating against and talking to our partners with. I do understand that there was a legal case in Hawaii recently that fought this and won. And so I think when we think of national rollbacks for programs of like ours, we're kind of the on-the-ground way to work with our local partners to come up with solutions together on how we can do our best to sort of fight against these rollbacks as they happen.
So if it won in Hawaii, is that going to apply here?
I would hope so, but I am not a legal expert, and I am not a member of the New York State judicial system. So, but yeah, I mean, I would hope if precedent is set in one area that would also apply to other states. But, we're in a wait and see kind of pattern.
So while we wait and see, what is happening is there less oversight on the part of the federal government? Have you been seeing increased impacts, let's say, on our waters, on the environment and the safety of our waters, the health and safety of our waters in the last several years?
I would say this. I would say EPA Region 2, who I work very closely with, has in no way stop their diligence and stop the work that they do as they're mandated under the Clean Water Act to do so. I work very closely with state, local, and federal agencies to make sure we have not lowered our standards, any of us, the EPA, the states, the county. And so we will keep marching forward. And as yet, I mean, I haven't seen any in the Peconics, any immediate changes. Except that, we're moving forward with our management plan. We're moving forward with our goals as we always have. And in part, we're a single state estuary program. We're a single county estuary program. And we kind of have the benefit to be led by our local governments. And that is something that when we see larger sweeping federal actions taking place, we can focus locally and do what we need to do.
This is Sustainable East End on WPKN Radio. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We're exploring the Peconic Estuary with Dr. Joyce Novak, Program Director of the Peconic Estuary Partnership. So, Joyce Novak, you also, the Peconic Estuary Program, or now the Peconic Estuary Partnership, has been also taking up the issue of sea level rise. I wonder if you could tell our audience what has the program been doing?
Sure. We have a focus on coastal resiliency. One of the things that we completed using some of our EPA funds recently was a critical lands protection strategy, where we worked throughout our watershed to look at land use and analyze parcels of land that were developed, undeveloped, and agricultural lands in order to create a ranking system to prioritize areas for preservation based on certain proxies of changing climate. So we looked at the projected sea level rise data, and we looked at the potential increased precipitation that is going to be coming down the line, and prioritize parcels for wetland migration and preservation that if the towns or the county or the state had funds and so chose to purchase those properties, that they would be key pieces, parcels of land that would create natural resiliency and allow for our natural systems to be able to adapt to climate change and sea level rise in particular.
So are you saying that, you know, as sea level rises, the town, you are advising the towns as to what places might be the most advantageous for them to take over, which would also assume that, that they would be buying those properties and encouraging private owners to relocate or move inward in order to provide a kind of buffer? Is that right?
So yes, that's partially right. My goal, our organization's goal is to educate the towns. So, you know, I can't direct them to do anything, but I can provide what we've done here in conjunction with a company called Anchor QEA and the Nature Conservancy is put together a map-based tool that the towns can use, that the county can use to look at areas that are currently undeveloped, if they would like to prioritize those for purchase. And to look at areas that are developed, in what capacity they're developed, if there are parcels that shouldn't be further developed, or if the landowner was willing to sell their property to a town. But yeah, I mean, I think we have to think realistically about the future, and especially in the wake of what we saw happen in Mastic, where Brookhaven and TNC have purchased areas that were previously at homes on them. I think we have to be having that same mindset on the East End and looking at parcels that are also developed for, if necessary, purchase in the future.
And what are some of the results of your investigations in terms of, you know, impacts of sea level rise? I know that that's a huge topic, but maybe you could just talk about some of the most notable things that come to mind about it.
I think the most notable thing that comes to mind is it is highly variable in different areas. So it's not going to be a sweeping change that happens with the same amount of sea level rise. You know, across the northeastern seaboard, or even within the Pecanics. There will be embayments that because of the groundwater being high and because of sea level also rising, that will be impacted much more severely in areas that maybe don't have the same groundwater issues, or maybe have different geomorphology along the coastline that will enable them to weather sea level rise more advantageously. But so it's really pointed out areas, I think, the variation in those areas. I think another thing that stands out is how much of the shoreline is already hardened and how we really have to keep our eye on not increasing the linear feet of bulkhead and the hardened shorelines within the Pecanics.
And why is that?
Well, for several reasons. Mass bulkheading doesn't necessarily fix the problems of sea level rise. Sometimes it's, you know, a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. And it changes the habitat of the shoreline so severely. I mean, you lose breeding grounds for horseshoe crabs. You lose areas of natural migration for grasses and wetlands. We're finding that our submerged aquatic vegetation, our eelgrasses, which are extremely important in the Pecanics, are then affected by having a hardened shoreline, you know, around their beds. So we don't want to, I think, encourage this type of shoreline hardening. And that should also be a target that comes out of coastal resiliency projects.
Now, what are some of the other methods that you recommend for coastal resiliency, for slowing down the impact of sea level rise? You know, I've heard of things like oyster beds and areas that are maybe built up to modify the velocity of storm surge. Is there anything that you can point to that we should be focusing on as maybe not a solution, because the solution is to stop polluting with carbon in the atmosphere, but to mitigate?
I think one of the mitigation areas that we're heavily involved in is living shorelines. So we recently completed phase one of a living shoreline demonstration project
in Greenport at Widow's Hole, in conjunction with Peconic Land Trust, who owns the property, and Cornell Cooperative Extension, who designed it, to look at how a series of small stones and grasses and upland and wetland plantings can work together to sort of mitigate wave action and help create some sort of natural barrier. We're also in the middle of a project at the Suffolk County Marine Environmental Learning Center on a canaled area to look at what different types of natural buffering would look like, including mussels and grasses and some choir logs. And we're going to continue with trying to get different types of living shorelines completed so that we can really put together an educational tool for the public so that people have an option. Again, education is key. People don't know what's out there. They don't know what their options are. They know that their neighbors have a bulkhead. And in some cases, when your neighbor has a bulkhead, the sediment redistribution almost forces you to do the same. So giving them other options rather than the default of, well, I need to put up a bulkhead now, will be key in the future. It is already key, but there's just not enough known out there on Long Island about what people's options are.
I saw an article the other day of these tubes that could be embedded in the shoreline that would actually allow for a buildup of sand instead of erosion of sand. They wouldn't be seen. You could walk over them. Have you heard of that as a solution?
Are you talking about geotubes? I'm unfamiliar with that. I mean, one of the great things I think about living in the technology age that we live in is that people are always coming up with new and novel approaches to these problems. And I think we really have to keep an open mind about what's possible if we're willing to try them. And that's what we're trying to do with smaller areas, be able to put together a suite of possibilities for people and municipalities to choose from, rather than the, you know, decades of bulkheading that we've had to do.
So you talk about the Peconic Estuary partnership as a partnership, not just with towns, but really you talk also about the educational function. And of course, this is something for the public as well. How would you like the public to be involved? What can people listening to this program do to help the efforts that you're so much behind?
I think that people can get involved, and that doesn't mean, you know, devoting every moment of your free time. But I think at this point, you know, the onus is on us as citizens to become informed. And that's a really daunting task. You know, I don't do my own taxes because I don't understand tax law. I can't expect the general public to understand all the complexities with things like coastal resiliency and water pollution. But so getting involved with organizations like ours or like the Agabonic Protection Committee or any local area that can give you information on the small things you can do, like upgrading your septic tank is an option now that wasn't an option 2 years ago. You know, finding out where your stormwater is going and seeing how on your own property you can make those small changes as best you can, planting native plants in your garden. We have a homeowner rewards program that will help pay for native plants in people's gardens so that we can encourage them to try and manage stormwater more responsibly. And there's a wealth of information and small steps that people can take so they don't feel as powerless in the face of these big challenges, and that we can collectively begin to take those steps forward.
Well, that sounds terrific. And where would somebody go to find out about, say, the homeowners reward program and all the other information that you have?
Well, you can certainly go to our website, peconicestuary.org. We have links to all of our programs on there about ways to get involved. On social media, the Peconic Estuary Partnership is, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and all of our stuff is posted there, you know, or just reach out, give us a phone call. We'd be happy to educate anybody who's willing to join us.
Well, Joyce Novak, you are the director of the Peconic Estuary Partnership. This has just been a terrific conversation. Thank you so much for joining us here on Sustainable East End. This is Sustainable East End. You've been listening to our conversation with Dr. Joyce Novak, Program Director of the Peconic Estuary Partnership. More information about the Peconic Estuary and the partnership is available at peconicestuary.org. Sustainable East End is heard on the third Wednesday of each month at this time, and also on the second Saturday each month at 9 a.m. Programs are archived at www.sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Sustainable East End is produced by Tony Ernst and yours truly, Francesca Rhiannon.